Aloha, this is Catherine Cruz. Mahalo for joining us. Hawaii Talks on the Conversation. It is Tuesday, April 1st. It's been about 2 months since the first protests against the Trump administration's executive orders and massive cuts to government service and government jobs. We check in with an organizer about plans for another statewide rally. We talk to Honolulu Civil Beat about a story that highlights serious problems with the state's handling of food benefits for needy families. We take a closer look at privacy rights when it comes to genetic testing, what you should know in this age of DNA data online. We hear from the State Consumer Protection Director. And we salute Mother Nature in this, the year of our community forests. We learn about a new card game that you may get a chance to win. You're tuned to The Conversation here on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. A group behind a large protest that was organized at the state capitol a couple of months ago is at it again. They first rallied against the executive orders issued by President Donald Trump and the actions taken by billionaire Elon Musk and the Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE. This group is now organizing efforts to take to the streets again on Saturday across the state. This morning, Lisa Gibson stopped by our studio to talk about what's planned. The demonstration will be the first since police were called to a protest at the Tesla showroom in Waikiki this past weekend. A counter-protester was arrested for assaulting one of the participants. Gibson wants to avoid any violence in the future and says Indivisible Hawaii has its peaceful protest protocols in place.
We have our safety protocols. We have been in communication with the police. But we need to let Trump and Musk know that they cannot intimidate us into submission. Because at this point, because of the courts and Congress and the House, we are the guardrails. The public, you and me, voters, are the guardrails to protecting Hawaii and our democracy and Indivisible Hawaii as 12 chapters across the state. We're really proud that there are these scheduled events on every single island. And we're showing up, and we hope you will too, others will too, because we cannot give up in advance. If anybody's ever read Timothy Snyder's books on tyranny and on freedom, do not give up in advance. We are the guardrails. If democracy is important to you, I hope you'll show up.
And we have seen these protests take hold across the country. Some of them are coordinated, some of them are on certain days, some are not. It really runs the gamut. But this weekend, you've got one scheduled for Saturday.
Yeah, so this is an organic event. So early in February, a group that none of us had ever heard of called 50-51, which stands for 50 capitals, 50 states, one movement, randomly called this event on February 5th. Then they called for another one on February 17th. And by that time, Indivisible National had reached out to them, partnered with them. And so we are now part of, it's not just Indivisible, a mass mobilization across the country. So in Hawaii, we're really proud. We've got noon at the state capitol here on Oahu. Hilo is, I'm reading my little list here, 10 to 1 p.m. on Highway 11 in front of Ross, Kau, noon to 1 in Na'olehu, that's really cool, Kona, Kailua Kona, 4 to 5 p.m. on the Queen Kaʻamanui Highway, that's because it's too hot at noon in Kona, and Waimea is 10 to 11. All this information is on the homepage of the Indivisible Hawaii website, indivisiblehawaii.org. You can get all that information, along with our peaceful protest protocols.
And, you know, I have seen information where they were calling on marches or protests in front of state capitals in other states across the country.
There are 1,000 of these events. And I think what's important, this event, the theme of this event is hands off. And the theme of the message to Trump and Musk is hands off. Our children, our kupuna, our veterans, our healthcare, our environment, our cultural values. We are in a constitutional crisis and we are vulnerable. We need to tell them hands off today and we're going to be back again to tell you hands off tomorrow. We cannot allow ourselves to be intimidated What's the metric that they use? You can overthrow an authoritarian once you get to 3.5% of the population. You've seen this happening in Eastern Europe, in some of those capitals. We're getting there. A lot of it is just people understanding what's going on. This is not about Republicans and Democrats. This is about people losing their job or their neighbor being taken away in the middle of the night by ICE. What's happened to the rule of law? What's happened to habeas corpus? What's happened to doing what the courts are ordering? You are talking about a basic. There is no democracy without the rule of law, period. So we are in a constitutional crisis. Don't pretend that it is not happening. It is happening. And we are the public is the only barrier.
You know, when I was down there covering that rally on President's Day, the Not My President protest, I was pretty impressed at the numbers that came out. It reminded me of the days when I would cover the state legislature and the union leadership would get all its members out and they'd be out there en masse protesting, you know, whether it be for their, you know, their contract raises or whatnot. But at the other demonstrations and rallies that I've, you know, gone down to cover, I noticed it's mainly an older group. I don't see a lot of young people. So, you know, how are you reaching out to the youth, you know, the millennials, the Gen X folks, just because, you know, it impacts them as well, but they may not know it.
I think that's beginning. You know, they're not getting their jobs, or maybe they're a scientist and their grant didn't get extended or whatever. It's beginning. And you are right. The folks who started my Indivisible chapter, average age is over 60. Guess what? We have time. You know, we read a lot, but we are totally reaching out to folks with more social media experience. Filling that gap on social media is a gigantic goal for us. So as they lose their jobs, or, you know, what did I read today? That massive layoffs, 10,000 healthcare workers are getting laid off as of today. Those are young people. That's not just older people.
Yes. And, you know, we have watched in the recent weeks, you know, plans to lay off, if they've not already, scientists at NOAA, at the Weather Service, same thing for Environmental Protection Agency, you know, the scientific community, the people that do the basic science.
Yeah, this is part of an overall, authoritarians like to have an underinformed population, which is why Trump and Musk and the Republicans are having an incredible assault on the American mind. He's dismantled the Department of Education, gutting the staff. He's cutting funding to public libraries. You just mentioned it's happening here in Hawaii. And museums, invaluable places that provide internet access, literacy programs. He's going after scientific research, University of Hawaii, NOAA. How about the Weather Service for, you know, predicting hurricanes? He's threatening universities, researchers, students, free speech. This isn't about policy or efficiency. This is about power, unadulterated power. Create fear and chaos and get control and take power. And we, the electorate, the citizens of this state in Hawaii, we need to protect Hawaii and we need to protect Hawaii and we need to step up and show up for these kinds of events on Saturday. And as I said, the schedule all over the state is on the homepage of Indivisible Hawaii's website.
You know, and we do hear that the reason why this administration is doing what it's doing is to rein in our spending, which is, some say, is run amok. There is waste. We have a huge debt that keeps growing. And so some say, well, you know, we need to rein in what's going on because it can't keep on the same path.
There's no doubt that, you know, come on, government can always get more efficient. But trust me, what's going to happen very soon is the Republicans are going to put forward a bill to extend the tax cut. This is about cutting the budget so that they can cut taxes for very wealthy people. So Elon Musk can continue to get, I'm not sure of the number, $23 billion, $46 billion in federal contracts to make him very rich. You know, I've got some data here. There are going to be 2.2 billion cuts to programs in Hawaii. Can the government operate more efficiently? Of course. But you do not take a sledgehammer when what you need is a strategic approach to cutting the budget. This is obscene, and it is hurting a lot of people, and a lot of people are going to continue to get hurt. It's not over. It's not over.
That was Lisa Gibson of Invisible Hawaii. It's a group that Gibson started, which is helping to organize a protest this Saturday across the state. She says anyone who's been affected by the federal cuts is invited to stop by their table to share their story. Look for links on our website later today.
Support for HPR comes from Nareit Hawaii, which supports nonprofits that are providing affordable housing solutions to convert renters into homeowners, such as Hawaiian Community Assets. NareitHawaii.com.
Tune in to HPR 2 on Monday at 8 p.m. for the first in a new series of Hawaii Symphony Orchestra Masterworks concerts. Under the direction of Maestro Dane Lam, we'll hear Scheherazade Opus 35 by Rimsky-Korsakov. Guest violinist Jennifer Koh will perform Missy Mazzoli's Violin Concerto. We'll also hear a world premiere of Children of Gods by Michael Thomas Fumai. That's Monday at 8 p.m., sponsored by the Rice Partnership.
Support for HPR comes from Costco Air Conditioning and Refrigeration, featuring Daikin Air Conditioning Systems. Listing of contractors installing Daikin products, that's D-A-I-K-I-N, at CostcoHawaii.com.
This morning, the lead story for Honolulu Civil Beat is about a benefits program that impacts low-income families. Joining us today is Investigations Editor John Hill. Good morning, John.
Hi, Catherine.
Yeah, so you did a deep dive into this system. I mean, they were trying to, modernize what we're dealing with, and it hasn't quite worked out.
Yeah, it was it's the system that the computer system, the IT system they used to determine whether people are eligible for the various benefit programs that Hawaii offers, like every other state, like SNAP, you know, formerly known as food stamps, help with, you know, buying food, as well as TANF, which is cash payments to help people, you know, during hard times, and a number of other programs. And there's a 40-year-old computer system that is trying to handle doing the eligibility screening for folks and administering the benefits, and they've been trying to replace it basically since 2018 and have been having a lot of problems.
Yes, and the federal government actually fined the state because there were just so many errors.
Yeah, it's kind of ironic. The U.S. Department of Agriculture fined the state $10.9 million for having a high error rate in the SNAP program. And what the state has done, what the Department of Human Services has done, is said, well, we have the option of taking half of that money, $5.4 million, and putting it back into the computer system that is supposed to, if the computer system had been done on time in 2022, they probably wouldn't have had that high error rate to begin with. So now they're using the money from the fine to try to complete the system by 2026 and get their error rate down.
But this is distressing because this is taxpayers' money and it affects, you know, some of our poorest families.
Yeah, I found, and I included in the story, a number of instances where the state auditor in doing... Well, actually, it wasn't the state auditor. It was an independent auditing firm that did financial audits of this department and found that there were cases where there wasn't the kind of documentation being done to extend welfare benefits to people. There were cases where people were not paying child support and they should have been flagged by the system so that their benefits could be adjusted accordingly. And that wasn't happening because a lot of the processes are done manually in this system, and they keep pointing to this new IT platform that's really been under consideration since the early 2010s as the solution to these problems. And yet, as I say, it was supposed to be done in 2022, and they've had to revise the target date repeatedly, and now the new target date is October 2026. And I think everybody is really looking forward to getting this new system off the ground and hope they meet that date, because there are a lot of problems with the old system.
And your story highlights also that some eyebrows were raised because a former government administrator was then hired for a position at the company that eventually got the contract.
Yes, Pankaj Banot is the former director of DHS, and he left in 2020. And in 2022, with the state was his former department was having a serious problem with the original contractor, and decided to replace them with a company called eWorld. And around that time, Pankaj Banot was hired as the CEO of that company. But the state told me, and I have no reason not to believe them, that they had been considering making this move for several months before he was appointed. But it is a little bit of a strange situation, because he was the one who originally signed the contract in 2018 to get this project started, and now he's sort of on the other side of the equation, running the company that's going to get it done, and that they're hoping is going to get it done.
Yeah, and there are, you know, guidelines about how long you have to wait before you can represent a company, you know, just with the conflict laws, the ethics laws and all. But yeah, it certainly is an interesting read, because you do, you know, have a deep dive here on what is costing taxpayers money.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it seems like it oftentimes happens with these big government IT projects. I'm not quite sure what it is, but this is definitely an example of one that's gone a bit off the rails. They say they're back on track now, and we'll see.
All right. Thanks so much, John.
Thank you, Catherine.
We've been hearing from Civil Beat Investigations editor John Hill. You can read his story at civilbeat.org. This is The Conversation on statewide member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. Coming up, your backyard quiz. Today, we're spotlighting a versatile plant cultivated as a shade tree. Recognized in old Hawaii for its beauty as well as utility, they were a common sight around the coast. In fact, the Waikiki home of Kamehameha I was said to be surrounded by these shade trees. The seeds of the plant were brought to the Hawaiian Islands by early Polynesian settlers and were referenced in ancient chant and prayer. The bark of this tree was used for cordage. The fruit yielded a yellow-green kapa dye, and the lumber was prized in the crafting of canoes, utensils, furnishings, and jewelry. The flowers of this tree have bright yellow hibiscus-like blooms that churn different shades of orange, pink, and red throughout the day. For today's quiz, we want to know what this mystery canoe plant is. Call 808-941-3689 or 877-941-3689 if you know the answer. The first one to get it right will win an HBR tote bag and a brand new prize. We're partnering with Trees for Honolulu's Future to give away a deck of cards for the game Kumulaau. Curious about how the game works? Well, Dan Donnell from Trees for Honolulu's Future dropped by with a pack of cards to play with us. Take a listen.
Kumulaau is the simplest, most fun tree game you've ever played. My 12-year-old son plays it. My 97-year-old dad can play it. You get a tree card. So what card did you get, Catherine?
I got Hala.
And I got Milo.
And I have Ohia Lehua. So all Hawaii, either canoe or native plants, and you need to collect the things your tree needs to grow. First person who does that wins the game. So, Maddie, what do you have to grow?
I need 2 water, 3 sun, 1 nutrient, and 1 soil in order to grow my Milo plant.
All right. And it tells you a little bit about the Milo tree as well. So you can learn as you go along. What do you have, Catherine?
I have two water, two sun, two nutrient, and one soil.
And did you learn anything by the description of your tree?
Yes. The leaves are weaved to make mats, thatching for roofs, and more, while its dried fruit can be used as paintbrushes. Fun fact, I did not know that.
You did not? Well, you've learned already. And that's the whole idea here, is a fun way to learn. So I have Ohia Lehua. I also need water, sun, nutrient, and soils. So once you have your tree card, in the middle of the table, you'll have resource cards, and you draw, and you get different things. So Maddie's got a nutrient. What did you have, Catherine? You have trouble.
I have trouble. Pilakia, disease. A fungus called sooty mold covers trees and blocks photosynthesis. I need one additional nutrient resource to grow my tree.
So that's what you need to do. I got a nutrient. And the play just continues on in this fashion until one of us is successful growing their tree. And that's all there is to it.
Okay, the game takes about 10 minutes to play, and teachers are using the card game in classrooms, even expanding it to have the students create a whole forest of trees. We'll have more from Trees for Honolulu later in the show.
Support for the Backyard Quiz comes from Nareit Hawaii, which supports nonprofits that are working to provide affordable housing programs to transition renters into homeowners, such as Hawaiian Community Assets. NareitHawaii.com.
In this day and age of genetic testing, privacy is something that the general public needs to know to safeguard their data. There's a window that's narrowing if you're one of the consumers who paid the company 23andMe to run genetic and medical testing on your DNA. The company is now in bankruptcy court. The case has highlighted a need to update the state's consumer privacy laws. There's a bill, Senate Bill 1038, that needs to be scheduled before a deadline later this week. Here to talk about what you need to know about these genetic testing companies and your right to privacy is Mana Moriarty, Executive Director of the Office of Consumer Protection.
Well, it's important that they know that there is some risk whenever you submit the most sensitive DNA information or a swab, which leads to the creation of DNA information, to an institution. That institution, like any other, is fallible. It could be there for the next 5 decades, or it could move into a bankruptcy, it could move into a sale, and how the information is handled afterwards. Really, in this modern age, it's governed by a series of sometimes Byzantine privacy terms and conditions that are specific to the company and the leadership at a particular date and time. And those privacy policies can change. Honestly, as a consumer, it can be a little bit bewildering. If you tried to keep up with the privacy terms, really, you probably need a law degree and some specialization. So many of us, understandably, don't try anymore to keep up with the privacy terms and conditions that come with a lot of the services that we access nowadays.
It's a lot of fine print.
It is. And what they can do with the information that you provide to the company, I'm not talking specifically about 23andMe, but really across the board, it's governed by these contractual terms and conditions, and those can change. Companies may want to use the information that they provide to you to offer targeted advertising for other products in the future. They may even want to sell the information that you provide to them in the future. So it is important for us to be aware that that's going on.
You know, I think maybe what, 5-10 years ago when people first heard about this, they're like, oh, this is kind of a novel idea. I should check it out, figure out where my ancestors came from, you know, figure out, am I really Italian or am I Chinese or something else? And so what may have seemed novel, or like in the case of 23andMe, because I think they offered a health aspect, a medical aspect as well, that a lot of people might have done the saliva swabs and sent it in the mail and not understanding and realizing what was being created, you know, the data that was out there.
I think the news media has reported something like 15 million 23andMe subscriptions. Now, the company is trying to reorganize, which means that they're trying to consummate a sale, and they're taking with them sort of the goodwill. They want to make a sale of the business to remain an ongoing concern. So it makes sense that they want to continue to honor the customer programs that they've already put in place and continue to offer something like the services that their customers have come to, in some instances, enjoy, including the health programs that the customers have access to. So this was not only an ancestry service where you tried to match your DNA to ancestors. As you said, it was a line of business that included a telehealth aspect that allowed you to consult with, for a subscription premium, that allowed you to consult with medical professionals who might be able to tell you something about medical conditions that your genome may predispose you to. At this point, you know, looking at the public bankruptcy filings, it very much looks like the company wants to maintain their customer serving programs in the future. That's what they're representing to the bankruptcy court and to the world at large at this point. In the 23andMe case, we put out a release taking consumers step by step and telling them how they can go onto their profile and delete the sensitive data that they provided to the company. Now, that is an option for every consumer out there. We had heard some news media reports that subscribers were having trouble accessing their account and deleting their profile information, deleting the DNA information they provided to the company. We reached out to the company. We heard back that the information that we provided in the press release and that was reported on by HPR and other organizations remains good information. Those remain the correct steps to take if you want to delete the information that you provided to the company. That's important. That's really important that the company is out there saying, confirming that they're going to honor the request to delete the information. And if you take a step back and think about it, that really is part and parcel, if you're the business, of maintaining goodwill with the customers that have been your customers throughout history and going forward. Our organization, we represent sort of the civil law enforcement aspect that takes an interest in how these companies are preserving privacy information, how they're honoring requests to delete it, and how they're protecting it. So if you are a subscriber and you put in a request to delete your information and you encounter some friction in that process, that's something that our office wants to know about. And you can go ahead and make a report to our office. Give us some insight into what that process looks like for subscribers to the platform. Just to be clear, we haven't had any direct reports of customers that have had friction or had trouble getting their accounts deleted. There were some news media reports right after the bankruptcy was filed indicating that there were some crashes on the website. We've learned that the company has attributed those crashes to some increased volume, but they've since rectified the problem, and they are standing by their policy to honor the deletion requests from their customer database.
Anything else that you want to add? Like I said, you were talking more specifically about 23andMe, but just as a general, I don't know, guardrail for this type of genetic testing service that's available out there?
You know, these businesses are out there. They're part of our brand new world. They are businesses that have, you know, followed the advances in medical science to be able to provide direct to consumer DNA data and DNA sequencing. And I would just urge caution, urge people to think about what they're providing and make their own informed decisions about the businesses to whom they're providing this information. There are risks. In some cases, the potential for receiving informed medical consultation about your health conditions that you may be predisposed to may outweigh the risks of providing the information to a company. And in other instances, people may reach a different decision.
Okay.
I do want to talk a little bit about our state privacy laws, because this situation has really shed some light on what our privacy laws provide in terms of customer rights and what they do not provide at this point. So we can, if you have time, we can go ahead and trace this back, this 23andMe bankruptcy. It follows about a year and a half after 23andMe announced a data breach of limited health information and ethnic and genetic information. And that occurred, they announced this data breach in October 2023. As you can imagine, customers were predictably upset that their sensitive information had been compromised in what appeared to be a cyber criminal attack on 23andMe. The cyber criminals, according to court filings, had specifically targeted 23andMe customers of Ashkenazi Jewish and Chinese descent and then offered their data for sale on the dark web. Predictably, lawsuits were filed. Those lawsuits were eventually consolidated, and the litigation moved very quickly into a settlement posture. And so late last year, in September 2024, the company and the plaintiffs in the cases announced that they had sought court approval for a settlement to resolve the claims of the people whose information had been breached. And it was to be a $30 million settlement. And the court went ahead and gave a conditional approval. However, as far as our office is aware, no claims forms have been sent out, and that litigation has been paused as a result of the bankruptcy filing. So if we look at this from the Hawaii lens, what I'm concerned about is that Hawaii has, frankly, an antiquated law on data breach notifications. Data breach notification law requires that when companies holding the sensitive and personal information of Hawaii residents becomes aware that the personal information has been subjected to unauthorized access, it's been breached, the company has to provide a notification to the individual who's affected by the breach.
Did they do that in this case?
That's what I'm getting to. The issue for us in this case is that law enforcement in Hawaii does not have adequate insight into what the company did and didn't do. In many cases, law enforcement will get a data breach notification from the company once they're made aware that the breach has affected a threshold number of consumers. So that's 1,000 Hawaii residents. That's what's in our law. Our office will receive information about the breach when 1,000 individuals have been affected. The problem arises in that our law is so antiquated that the only types of information that are specified in our law to trigger a breach notification to law enforcement are social security numbers, driver licenses, and one other category that I'm forgetting right now. Now, according to the public information about the 23andMe breach, the information breached was ethnic and genetic information and health information. Now, that seems to me to be some of the most sensitive information that anybody can provide, since it's unique to the individual. When you're talking about a genome, it can only be one person with that same genome.
So are you saying that our laws are antiquated? Did they need to be updated?
Our state law absolutely needs to reflect the reality of these new businesses out there that are collecting even more sensitive information than social security numbers and driver licenses. Now, there is a bill currently in the House, and it's Senate Bill 1038. It's been introduced every year for the last 6 years, and it is one of the last remaining pieces of legislation that was reviewed by the legislature's 21st Century Task Force on Privacy. And unfortunately, year after year in the legislature, this bill has been defeated by special interests. So we have really, this year, made some significant progress on amending the bill. And I want to thank the House Committee on Economic Development and Technology, who did an excellent job in the last committee, bringing the bill to where it needs to be. So we have an opportunity now to update our state data breach notification law to include categories like health and genetic information as specific triggers, which will require companies to give information to individuals affected and to the state of Hawaii so we can have insight into what types of data breaches have occurred.
Okay, because we've got to be able to protect ourselves, our information that is on there online, and we need the state laws to reflect the times that we live in.
That's right. Yeah. We need the state law to be modernized to reflect the times that we live in.
That was Mana Moriarty, Executive Director of the Office of Consumer Protection, talking to us about what the 23andMe bankruptcy case says about whether state laws do enough to protect the public.
Support for HPR comes from the University of Hawaii Foundation. Its 4UH for Hawaii campaign connects donors with UH to fuel innovation and entrepreneurship across the islands. UHFoundation.org.
HPR Generation Listens Trivia is moving to a new night. Join us on the first Tuesday of the month at Village Bottle Shop and Tasting Room in Kaka'ako. We'll share an evening of lively but friendly competition while connecting with fellow public radio nerds. Learn more at hawaiipublicradio.org/genlisten.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Bonnie Rice and the Rice Partnership, providing full-service wealth management on Oahu, Maui, and throughout California. Learn more at thericepartnership.com.
And now it's time to harvest the answer to the backyard quiz. Earlier, we told you about a versatile canoe plant first brought to Hawaii by early Polynesians as seeds. It prefers full sun and is tolerant of drought, wind, heat, and salt. And if you happen to be in a sunny coastal area, you'll be grateful for the shade it provides. At full maturity, this species can grow to more than 40 feet tall with a trunk that can be 2 feet in diameter. The tree was said to be reserved for ali'i, and commoners were forbidden from harvesting or utilizing the plant. That might explain why the Waikiki home of King Kamehameha I was surrounded by the tree. Commonly called the Pacific rosewood or Indian tulip tree, the tree is covered by heart-shaped leaves and blooms that one might mistake for hibiscus. Bright yellow flowers with maroon centers open in the morning hours and turn to various shades of orange, pink, and reddish hues later in the day. And the name of our mystery tree, the Milo tree. Oh my gosh, our phone lines blew up. So many people guessed how, but the correct answer is Milo. And congrats to our winner, Brianna from Hilo, got it right. And it was adorable. We could hear her child in the background, and we're told the child's name is Kukui. But that is our quiz for today. If you have one, send it to talkback at hawaiipublicradio.org. You know, before the break, Dan Donnell from Trees for Honolulu's Future explained how to play the card game, Kumula'au. Here's Donnell explaining more about his organization.
Trees for Honolulu's Future is a nonprofit. We focus on education, advocacy, and facilitating, bringing people and groups together in order to grow our urban forest. And that's a very key distinction about our organization. It's not that we don't care about Mauka forested lands, but we're really focused on places where people work, go to school, play, and we want to have more trees, the right trees in the right places where we live.
While your name says Trees for Honolulu, this year you are working with groups across the state.
That's correct. We were fortunate enough to get a grant from Ka'ulunani, which is the DLNR Urban Forestry Program, to help promote Year of Our Community Forests. And what we've done is the grant helps to pay for this game called Kumula'au, Tree in Olelo, Hawaii. And we're working, because we don't have the capacity, we don't have the footprint or the connections, we're working with with partners on all the islands in order to leverage their programs and outreach and really reach people throughout the state of Hawaii.
We just were recently on Kauai, and they were walking us through the National Tropical Botanical Forest system that they've got established and all the good that they do.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, National Tropical Botanical Gardens is one of our partners on Kauai Island. Maui Green and Beautiful on the island of Maui, working with the Outdoor Circle chapters in Waimea and on the East Hawaii Island. And Smart Trees Pacific is also another one of our neighbor island partners. And then here on Oahu, we're working with partners. So it's not, you know, we're doing the lift, but it's amplifying and working with others. One of the exciting ones is with Honolulu Theater for Youth. That has a summer fun program where they go in and put on a play. Well, we're going in with them. They'll be putting on the play, and we'll be playing Kumulau and leaving the cards behind for the summer fun program. So kids have something else to do, say, on a rainy day or if they're not, you know, up to doing their sports.
Yeah, it's a great idea. I mean, I know there are so many ways to engage the community. I took part in the Citizens Forestry group because I wanted to learn about the trees in my neighborhood and identify, you know, what's in our backyard, but had the opportunity to go to different communities to see what kind of trees were being planted. So it was a real eye-opener.
Absolutely. I mean, it's all about the right tree in the right place and also thinking forward of what are the climate conditions going to be like 10, 20 years down the line. So for instance, a drier climate, you want to make sure that you're planting the right kind of tree to thrive 20 years forward.
And, you know, in our neighborhood, I know that your group started the rain garden just on 11th Avenue,
right,
just before you get on the freeway. I stop there and see it every morning, and it really is flourishing.
Yeah, thank you for acknowledging that. That's a good example of just a small intervention making a big difference. You know, 500 square feet of just forgotten remnant land, and with the support of the city, we were able to make a little bioswale, plant 5 trees in that little space, and the trees are doing great. The ground cover needs a little bit more work, but we're working on that as well. But most of all, instead of that water running off onto 11th Avenue and into a catch basin and out to the alawai, it is running into the swale, percolating into the ground, and it's a much more sustainable intervention. And imagine if we had 1,000 of these in the alawai watershed, not just 1 or 2 or 3, but 1,000 small things add up to something big.
And then you were also working with the Palolo community as well, right, to help with the watershed area.
Exactly. We have an exciting green infrastructure project, Palolo Honganji, where we're going to be capturing rainwater. Again, water that comes from the heavens and just runs off into the stream and out to the sea. So we're going to be capturing that. They're going to be using it to water their garden. And it's just a wonderful win-win all around.
So what else do you have planned for the rest of this year of our community forest?
Oh, well, we have, like many other groups, Earth Day planting, actually in Palolo at Palolo District Park, working with the City and County Division of Urban Forestry. And we've got the Kumulau game going statewide. Keiki Art, I was just at the state capitol. It's on display for the whole month of April. So lots of things happening. People can get involved. Events are constantly being added to our website. And just encourage people, plug in where you can, what you can. You know, nobody's asking you to commit to 7 days a week of volunteering, but if you can volunteer once a month, wherever you are, there's activities on every island in every community.
And I know Mayor Kirk Caldwell had started that whole register a tree, right? You go to the tree giveaway at Foster Gardens or, you know, Manoa Valley District Park, and you get a tree and then you promise to plant it and take care of it.
Yeah, exactly. I think for us, the registration and the counting the numbers isn't as important as the follow-up. So we did a tree adoption. That's what we like to call it instead of a giveaway, because adoption actually conveys that it's a living thing and that you have a responsibility to care for it. A freebie just is a freebie, and it might sit on your lanai for 6 months and then get root bound, and then you're saying, I'll never plant it. So one of the things that we did was follow up within a month. Hey, how's your tree going? Have you planted it? And it's nudging, and it's a very important strategy. And then we followed up 6 months later. How's your tree doing? And I don't want to say we guilt people into doing good, but we want to let them know that there's some accountability here for receiving this valuable resource.
Yeah, because there have been wonderful efforts to plant more trees in our Honolulu. You know, I remember First Lady Gina Rioshi, you know, wanted to plant a million trees. And I think there was a UH researcher, same thing. We can do this, but you have to make sure that there's going to be follow-up, that tree, you aren't just going, like you said, going for the numbers, right? You want to make sure they thrive.
Well, and also make sure it's the right tree for that location. And, you know, every tree is different. You know, some are large canopy trees, and perhaps one tree there equals 10 smaller trees. So it's important that it's not simply a numbers game, but more appropriate place.
I like that idea of tapping into that need to follow up and take care. As part of that citizen forestry group, I know we went out and we were checking how healthy is the tree. But then you could also let the city know, hey, this tree's not doing so well, right? And so
correct,
that they could send an arborist out or somebody to check up, just to make sure if that tree's going to fall down, that you get it before it becomes a hazard.
Yes, absolutely. And I hats off to the city folks, because they will respond if a citizen sees a tree that, is this doing all right or so forth, because the cost of failure is much greater than an intervention. Tree limb falling on the street, potentially hurting people or property, much more serious than if you take proactive action.
And full disclosure, we're in the same neighborhood, and we did have a big tree fall down in the big winds, and it landed on a bus stop.
Yes. Yep. Yep. Again, and credit the city too, because when a large tree comes down, they follow up and replant. And the issue, though, is it takes decades before that tree reaches anything close to the canopy that it had provided.
So what else should people know about taking care of trees and what we can do in this year of our community forest?
Well, it's about getting good advice. So if you don't know, there's tons of resources online. Our website has resources that help you select the right tree. Totally encourage you to go to local nurseries. The people there, they will love to talk about trees. Just tell them where you live, the soil. You don't have to be an expert. You can even take like a little jar of soil with you and describe your conditions. Describe what you're looking for. Are you looking for fruit? Are you looking for shade? Are you looking for some kind of aesthetic flower or scent? So selecting the right tree is really the most important step. And then once you select that tree, again, tons of resources on how to care for your tree, how much water it needs, and back to location, is it full sun, partial sun, and so forth. So it all really starts with intention.
And just ask, right?
Someone
who knows.
Tree people are so happy to help.
Okay, you're a tree hugger. I'm a tree hugger. But anything else you want to just leave our listeners with?
Well, I would like to talk just a little bit more on Kumulaau, the inspiration for this game. We can't take credit for it. It was really middle schoolers during COVID at Iolani School developed a game they called Tremendous. It's a card game, and we saw it and we loved it. And so we started playing it and we thought, well, we could improve on it. We could make it a more Hawaii-centric game. And so that's what we did. A teacher in Aiea Intermediate School, Sherry Cassetta, our environmental educator, Olivia Poblancion, they worked together. They tested the cards. I cannot tell you the countless hours they did to develop this game that is really fun. And it all was because of some middle schoolers having this idea. Really, we just percolated and iterated off of it. And it's been tremendous. I sure hope your listeners will appreciate a chance to win a deck. But you can also purchase a deck. We're at several local bookstores across the state. I will give your website landing page. You can check it out. Foster Botanical Garden Gift Shop can pick up a deck. And, great gifts great way to enjoy trees in your living room.
All right, and a great way to kick off Earth Day and Earth Month.
That's right. Happy to be here.
Tremendous. We have been hearing from Dan Donnell from Trees for Honolulu's Future. Well, that wraps it up for us today. Tomorrow kicks off our spring membership drive. What do you value about the conversation or what you hear on Hawaii Public Radio? Tell us. Call our talkback line 808-792-8217 or email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. You can find the conversation as a podcast on Spotify, Apple, or on our website. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of the conversation.